أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Verse number 220. في الدنيا والآخرة ويسألونك عن اليتامى قل إصلاح لهم خير وأن تخالطوهم فإخوانكم والله يعلم المفسد من المصلح ولو شاء الله لأعنتكم إن الله عزيز حكيم. About the world and the hereafter, and they ask you concerning the orphans, say it is better to set right their affairs, and if you intermingle with them, they are of course your brothers. Allah knows the one who causes corruption from the one who brings about reform. And had Allah wished, He would have put you to hardship. Indeed, Allah is almighty, all wise. Now, this phrase, "fi dunya wal akhirah," as you have noticed, apparently belongs to the previous verse, "La'allakum tatafakkaruna fi dunya wal akhirah," so that you may ponder about the world and the hereafter. Why it has come into this verse? Probably it's because of the rhyming of the verses, because most of the verses here in Surah Baqarah ends with Noon or Meem, Hakim, Ta'lamun, Tatafakkarun, and this Fid Dunya Wal Akhirah doesn't go very nice in the rhyme. And the Quran is very scrupulous about rhyming, rhythm, measures of the verses. So, and that's how it has become a miraculous literature. So it has come into this verse, but it actually pertains to the previous verse, لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. As we were reciting about the الْخَمْرُ وَالْمَيْسَرُ, the wine and the gambling, and what are the benefits for them and the harms for them, at the end of the verse, Allah says, كَذَلِكَ يُبَيِّنُ اللَّهُ لَكُمُ الْآيَاتِ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ. In this way, Allah clarifies His signs for you so that you may reflect. لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ, which comes in the next verse, in this world and in the next. Now here, فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ is very interesting. First of all, when Allah legislates something like prohibition of alcohol, he just doesn't say it's prohibited, or actually explains why it's prohibited. It has harms, it has benefits, and the harm is more than benefit, but harm is mainly and most importantly for akhirah rather than for this world. When Allah talks of ithm, ithm is something which harms us in akhirah mainly. Of course, it harms in this world as well, but mainly in akhirah. Now, the first thing which we understand from لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ is that all these legislations that Allah has made for you have philosophy, has reason behind it, which you, if you think and ponder about it, you can find it out. And secondly, you should not think only about benefits or harms of this world. You have to think about both sides, fi dunya wal akhirah. When I tell you that you do not drink alcohol or any other legislation which it seems for you to be difficult, or for example, most of the people do it and it doesn't harm, it doesn't matter, you have to put both these sides together, dunya and akhirah. Dunya is, of course, the shorter time which these benefits and harm may come, but akhirah is longer, akhirah is more important. So whenever you want to discuss any legislation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whether it's reasonable, not reasonable, would intellect accept or not accept, would common sense agrees with it or wouldn't agree with it, do not focus your attention only to this world. Because if you do that, then you may come with wrong calculation. You have to put both sides. لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. Quran is very expressive in reasoning, actually. That's, most of the legislations are like that. When Allah talks about the legislation, gives the reasoning for it. And of course, the reasoning would make sense if we have these both sides of our lives, this world and the next world, considered together. So, لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْيَتَامَى. And they ask you concerning the orphans. Now, if you think about these few verses that we are discussing, يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْخَمْرِ وَالْمَيْسَرِ, they ask you about alcohol and gambling, they ask you about orphans, they ask you about Shahrul Haram, then we have coming, they ask you about Mahid, and all these things. Apparently, there were questions piling up, coming to the Prophet, piling up, and Allah has answered all of them in one go. As I said before, the revelation didn't come every day, or every week even. Sometimes for a couple of weeks, the revelation didn't come. And when people asked the question, the Prophet waited for the revelation to come. And sometimes the revelation came but did not answer the question. And people had to wait more and more to receive the answer from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now in these verses, several questions have piled up, and Allah is answering all of them one by one. The first one, Shahrul Haram, which of course happened just close to the revelation, and then about other things which Allah is answering here. So, وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْيَتَامَى, they ask you concerning the orphans. So it's better, قُلْ إِصْلَاحٌ لَهُمْ خَيْرٌ, it's better to set right their affairs. Now, why this question was asked? It's very clear, of course, orphans should be taken care of, orphans should be looked after, everyone knew that. However, in Surah Nisa, which some of its verses was revealed before this, before Surah Baqarah. As I said, Surah Baqarah sprawls from the beginning of migration to the end of migration. Allah spoke very harshly about treatment of orphans. That's very strict, that you should not touch their property, you should not wrong them in any way. Because Ahlul Jahiliyyah, they took an orphan as a sort of booty, as a ghanima. Because if someone was orphaned, for example, a nephew or a cousin, and the care came under them and they had wealth, they actually looked at it as a profit, that, okay, he or she is an orphan, we can do whatever we want with their property, and even if they were girls, we can marry them without giving mahr or things like that, marry them to our sons, and then take their property. So in Surah Nisa, the verses were very harsh. Some of the verses, for example, that we have in Surah Nisa, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَأْكُلُونَ أَمْوَالَ الْيَتَامَى ظُلْمًا إِنَّمَا يَأْكُلُونَ فِي بُطُونِهِمْ نَارًا. Those who devour the property of the orphans wrongfully meaning that not spending for them, not doing business with it for them, and taking it for themselves, they are devouring fire in their stomachs. Or at the beginning of Surah Nisa regarding marriage with the orphans. وَإِنْ خِفْتُمْ أَلَّا تُقْسِطُوا فِي الْيَتَامَى فَانْكِحُوا مَا طَابَ لَكُمْ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ. If you fear that you cannot do justice to orphan girls, and if you, for example, marry them or marry off them to your sons or whatever, do not approach them at all. Go and marry other women, not the orphans. Or وَيَسْتَفْتُونَكَ فِي النِّسَاءِ قُلِ اللَّهُ يُفْتِيكُمْ فِيهِنَّ وَمَا يُتْلَى عَلَيْكُمْ فِي الْكِتَابِ فِي يَتَامَى النِّسَاءِ. I have already mentioned for you how you have to treat orphan girls. Do not approach them, do not marry them if you think that you cannot give them their right. وَلَا تَقْرَبُوا مَالَ الْيَتِيمِ إِلَّا بِالَّتِي هِيَ أَحْسَنُ, which was revealed in Mecca. So all these made the believers very cautious about orphans, to the extent that sometimes they, for example, they made food, except especially the people who were poorer, they didn't have money, and they had to spend for the orphan from their own property. Now, for example, they cooked food for them, and they whatever was left over, they didn't touch, they just threw it away. Or even, for example, they didn't have space for themselves to bring a couple of orphans to their houses, and the orphans lived in their own houses, which they had as inheritance, and they didn't go into their houses. They didn't bring them to their own houses. It caused lots of difficulty. And this shows how misunderstanding of verses of the Quran, how short-sighted some people are in understanding the verses of the Quran. That, for example, if Allah says that do not touch the property of orphans, do not devour it wrongfully, they thought that even if, for example, they eat together, it's, they have done wrong. In Iran also we had this problem. We have actually that some people think, for example, when a person is orphaned, when a child is orphaned. Now, of course, they have to have the ceremony for their parents and they have to cook food and everything. They say, no, because she or he is orphaned, we don't touch anything. We don't have money ourselves. We don't do anything with their property. And this, of course, causes shame, causes disgrace, causes difficulty for the orphans. So because of this, as we have in hadith about the sha'nun nuzul of this verse from Abdullah ibn Abbas, it says that قال ابن عباس لما أنزل الله ولا تقربوا مال اليتيم, when Allah said do not touch the property of the orphans, or إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَأْكُلُونَ أَمْوَالَ الْيَتَامَى ظُلْمًا, those who devour the property of orphans wrongfully, انطلق كل من كان عنده يتيم فعزل طعامه وشرابه طعامه من طعامه وشرابه من شرابه. When these verses were revealed, they actually separated themselves with the orphans. They gave them separate food. They had their own separate food. وَاشْتَدَّ ذَلِكَ عَلَيْهِمْ, and this became very difficult. فَسَأَلُوا عَنْهُ فَنَزَلَتْ هَذِهِ الْآيَةِ, they asked about it, the Prophet, what should we do about the orphans? We do not dare to actually intermingle with them at all. These verses were revealed. As I said, the verses about not wronging Yatama, the verses of Surah Nisa are very clear. It was short-sightedness of some of the people thinking that they should go to the extremities with regarding to the treatment of Yatama. And also another hadith that we have that when, of course, Allah revealed those verses, اجتنبوا مخالطتهم في كل شيء, they did distance themselves from orphans completely until, for example, when a food was cooked for yatim from their own property for orphans, they did not touch it, even the leftovers, they threw it away. And they did not touch the property of the orphan in their own benefit. For example, they should have done business with it to accrue profit and these things, they didn't. So this is why the question came to the Prophet, peace be on him, وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْيَتَامَى, they ask you. And apparently the person who approached the Prophet in this was Abdullah ibn Rawaha, the great companion of the Prophet who was martyred in Muta as a shaheed. He came and asked, يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْيَتَامَى, يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ, what is our duty towards the orphans? قُلْ إِصْلَاحٌ لَهُمْ خَيْرٌ, say to set their things right is of course better. It's better for you, it's better for them. Better for you because you accrue thawab by doing it, by looking after it. You have to learn to actually work for them, use their property, but not for your own benefit, for their benefit. And also it's good for them because by doing that, by intermingling, by bringing them into your houses, by living with them, they do not feel, of course, alone. They do not feel the absence of their parents. So قُلْ إِصْلَاحٌ لَهُمْ خَيْرٌ. It is not good to abandon them. It's not good to abandon their property completely. It is better for you and them to be together. It's better in terms of education, in terms of teaching them manners and everything. So it's very amazing that how they understood the verses of Surah Nisa. That when Allah talked about that, how they understood it, that they went into the other extreme in their treatment with orphans. And this shows sometimes that misunderstanding of the verses of the Quran is not something new. It was there at that time as well, and the companions, who were very scrupulous actually with the verses of the Quran, they went to extremes in applying some of the verses. قُلْ إِصْلَاحٌ لَهُمْ خَيْرٌ وَإِن تُخَالِطُوهُمْ. And if you intermingle with them, فَإِخْوَانُكُمْ. Intermingling means, for example, first of all, if you don't have enough funds to provide for them, it doesn't matter if you spend from their own property for them. Of course, if it is better if you are well-to-do, do not spend their money. It's better that you spend for them. But if you don't have, or if you don't want, it's good that you spend their property over them. وَمَنْ كَانَ غَنِيًّا فَلْيَسْتَعْفِفْ وَمَنْ كَانَ فَقِيرًا فَلْيَأْكُلْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. If you are ghani, if you are well-to-do, okay, you don't take anything from them. If you are faqir and poor, it doesn't matter. But فَلْيَأْكُلْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, you can actually use their property according to the rules and standards of the day. And if you enter خَالِتُوهُمْ, if you intermingle with them, especially using their property for business, using their property to spend on themselves, it should be borne in mind that فَإِخْوَانُكُمْ, they are your brethren. In the sense that the way you treat the property of your brother, the way you treat the property of your loved ones, you have to do it in that way. For example, if you do business for your own son, how you treat that, how you look after it, how you want the best benefit to come. You don't say, okay, it's his property. I do a business, you do risk, you don't care, you don't mind. No, you do it in a way that as they are your brethren and look after them. وَإِن تُخَالِطُوهُمْ فَإِخْوَانُكُمْ. This is, there's a report from some of the Tabi'un and from A'imma alayhi salam in explanation of this فَإِخْوَانُكُمْ أَيْ فَهُمْ إِخْوَانُكُمْ, they are your brethren. وَالْإِخْوَانُ يُعِينُ بَعْضُهُمْ بَعْضًا. And you know, brothers in faith, they help each other. وَيُصِيبُ بَعْضُهُمْ مِمَّا لِبَعْضٍ. Yes, they can use each other's property. You can use their property if you need to spend on them. You can use it in business. And this, as the hadith says, this was a permission for them so that they do not take the issue of the orphans very strictly, so that it harms them and it harms the orphans. Okay, وَإِن تُخَالِطُوهُمْ فَإِخْوَانُكُمْ وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ لَأَعْنَتَكُمْ. Should Allah wished, He would have put you into hardship. Anat is hardship, mashaqqa. He would have put you into hardship with regards to the orphans. Now, this is a sort of emphasizing the position of orphans in society. That's whatever I have said about orphans, that you can use their property on themselves, you can eat or you can spend their property over them, is because I want you to be at ease. But the right of orphans is much more than this. And if Allah wanted, He would have put you in hardship with regards to that, that you have to look after their property, you have to accrue profit from it, over it, and you, for them, and you should have not touched anything over them, and you should have spent on them, you should have looked after them better than your children. But I don't want to put you into these hardships. just a sort of moderate ruling I'm giving you with regards to the orphans. وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ لَأَعْنَتَكُمْ أَنَتْ As I said, it's mashaqqa, as we have in Surah Tawbah, لَقَدْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولٌ مِنْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولٌ مِنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ عَزِيزٌ عَلَيْهِمَا أَنَتْتُمْ A messenger has come to you from yourself, which is very hard for him if you are in mashaqqa, in hardship. And if we look into the rulings of Islam, we see that most of them are so moderate that would not put us in hardship. Otherwise, if really we want to give thanks to Allah, if really we want to somehow do better with regards to our relation with Allah and our spiritual well-being, then things would have been much harder than this. However, this is a religion which is based on moderation, on ease. Shari'atun, samahatun, sahla. This is an easy sharia. In most cases, it's like that. And Allah emphasizes that here, that if Allah wanted to really give you the real right of orphans in society, you would have been in hardship. وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ لَأَعْنَتَكُمْ And now, وَإِنْ تُخَالِطُوهُمْ فَإِخْوَانُكُمْ Yes, you can bring them to your houses, you can spend from their own property over them. However, don't think that no one is watching over you. And that was the case. You had your nephew, for example, in your house, your cousin in your house, orphan girls, orphan boys. They don't know anything about money, property, all these things. And who is watching over the person who is looking after them? Wallahu ya'lamu al-mufsida min al-muslih. When you intermingle with them, of course, be careful. Allah knows who is seeking corruption in their affairs and who is seeking reform and well-being, looking after their well-being. وَاللَّهُ يَعْلَمُ الْمُفْسِدَ مِنَ الْمُصْلِحِ And at the end, of course, it says, وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ لَعَنَتُهُمْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ عَزِيزٌ حَكِيمٌ Of course, Allah is invincible. Aziz means invincible. You never can defeat Allah in anything. And of course, he is wise. Invincible in the sense that his rulings are made in a way that you cannot cheat him in that, and wise in legislating these rulings for you, which is based on ease and on convenience. Some people say, when these verses about, of course, orphans came, the question of marriage came as well. Because Allah was very strict in marriage with orphans. As at the beginning of Surah Nisa as well, it says, do not approach orphans for marriage because they think that they have no one to look after their after the affairs, and marry other women. وَإِنْ خِفْتُمْ أَلَّا تَعْدَلُوا فِي الْيَتَامَى فَانْكُهُ مَا طَابَ لَكُمْ مِنْ نَسَى Go and marry other women. Do not approach orphans. Some say that because this verse is talking about orphans, then the following verse talks about marriage. Who to marry, who not to marry. But apparently this is not very related. It's another question which has come to the Prophet. Another question about marriage with non-Muslims. وَلَا تَنْكِحُ الْمُشْرِكَاتِ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنَّ Verse 221, do not marry idolatrous, says, until they embrace faith. وَلَا أَمَةٌ مُؤْمِنَةٌ خَيْرٌ مِنْ مُشْرِكَهُ And a slave girl to marry with is better than an idolatrous. Though she should impress you. وَلَوْ أَعْجَبَكُمْ This ijab is another, in the Quran, is another word for love, even if you fall in love with them. Of course, love, the physical love that we know, is just this ijab that you someone marvel about someone. The Quran doesn't give that term love, which really is a real relationship between people and their children and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, just gives the word ijab, meaning marveling about something. وَلَا تَنْكَهُ الْمُشْرِكَاتَ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنْ وَلَا أَمَةٌ مُؤْمِنَةٌ خَيْرٌ مِّن مُشْرِكَ وَلَوْ أَعْجَبَكُمْ Even if you fall in love with them, do not do that. وَلَا تُنْكَهُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنُوا And do not give your girls to mushrikeen, to the idolaters. وَلَا عَبْدٌ مُؤْمِنٌ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنُوا until they believe. وَلَا عَبْدٌ مُؤْمِنٌ خَيْرٌ مِّن مُشْرِكٍ. And a faithful slave is better than an idolater, though you should, they should impress you, though you should fall in love with them, though he should impress you. أُولَٰئِكَ يَدْعُونَ إِلَى النَّارِ, those invite to the fire. وَاللَّهُ يَدْعُوا إِلَى الْجَنَّةِ وَالْمَغْفِرَةِ بِإِذْنِهِ, but Allah invites to paradise and pardon by His will. وَيُبَيِّنُ آيَاتِهِ لِلنَّاسِ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَذَكَّرُونَ, and He clarifies His communications for the people so that they may make admonition. Now, again, this prohibition of marriage between Muslim and non-Muslim is clarified with some reasoning here, some sort of philosophy behind it. Why I don't want you to do that, that even if you fall in love, and this love between man and woman is sometimes is taken to be the ultimate sort of pleasure and goal of life, and even if that happens, you should not marry them. About the question, as I said, this is another question. Of course, it doesn't start with وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ, things like that. But the question apparently came from one of the companions of the Prophet, peace be on him, that the Prophet sent him to Mecca. Apparently, when the things were calm and there was no fighting between Mecca and Medina, the Prophet sent him to bring some of the weaker believers to Medina. They couldn't migrate themselves. This man, Murthad ibn Abi Murthad, was very, very brave, very handsome, extremely handsome, astute man, things like that. And he went to Mecca to bring those people. And there was a lady in Mecca that they were in love before Islam, in Jahiliyyah. There was a lady, apparently they wanted to marry or something like that, but he believed, she did not believe, he migrated. When he went to Mecca, the lady visited him and said, okay, I mean, she wanted relation because they were in love before that. And he said, this is not allowed in Islam, we cannot do that. And she said, okay, marry me. If you do not want to have relation with him, marry me. He said, I have to ask the Prophet, peace be on him, if he allows me to marry you or not. You see, this how faithful this man was. I mean, he was in love with this lady. They had friendship before, and they had long, of course, acquaintance before Islam. After that, of course, they couldn't marry because Murthad migrated to Medina. And then he came and asked the Prophet, peace be on him. Now, this lady, although he was in love with this man, although she knew a lot about Islam, she did not want to believe. That's the point, isn't it? It was not the case that she didn't know, she was not aware. No, she was quite aware. She was quite aware of faith of this companion of the Prophet, but she did not believe. And Murthad, when he came to Medina, he asked the Prophet, is it allowed for me to marry that woman? And this verse was revealed in response. وَلَا تَنْكِهُ الْمُشْرِكَاتِ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنَّ. It actually doesn't close the door, isn't it? Doesn't close the door for him. If you want to marry her, she has to believe. She has to convert to Islam, and then you can marry her. لَأَمَةٌ مُؤْمِنَةٌ خَيْرٌ مِّن مُشْرِكَ. And a slave girl who is a believer is better than a free woman who is a mushrik. Now, slave girl, of course, it doesn't mean your own slaves, because the slave, one of the rulings that was there at the time of slavery, as we know that Islam legislated laws to free all slaves. And one of the laws was that if, for example, you have a slave girl and you had a child from her, then she became half free and you couldn't sell them. And after your death, they became free women. In a sense, the position of these slave ladies who were actually taken for relationship and marriage became like the status of the free women. You know that seven of the of our imams were born from this type of, they called them Ummu Walad, mother of a child. They didn't call them slave girls anymore after they married them or after they had relation with them. They didn't call them slave girls anymore. They were Ummu Walad, mother of the child. It was an honorary, of course, title for them. And they were freed later on. It's interesting. These slave girls were taken from other countries in wars, only in wars. They couldn't go and take like the age of slavery in the West, that they just went and gathered people and brought them. No. If there was a battle, if there was a war and people were captured, they were brought and they were actually integrated gradually by marriage, by coming into ordinary life, social sort of relations. They integrated and they became quite prominent. As I said, seven of our imams were born of these ladies who had come from other lands and were not Muslims. It's very interesting, it's very thought-provoking that there were many Muslim ladies at the time, very pious ladies, but these ladies who came from other faiths and then converted to Islam, they were so pure. It's very interesting. They were so pure that they actually could give birth to an imam. And we know that about imam, we say, من أسلاب شامخة وأرحام مطهرة. The wombs which were really, really pure and clean. And this shows how people of other faiths may, prior to converting to Islam, be so pure that when they convert to Islam, they became mothers of imams and things like that. Anyhow, here, amatun mu'mina, slave, means that if there are slave girls for other people, you want to go marry them. Not your own slaves, because your own slaves, of course, you have there is mahramiya between you and them. If, for example, you cannot marry a free woman because, of course, of the expenses and such things, and there are slaves, not every slave girl was taken for relationship, of course. People had many slaves, boys and girls, men and women, and when I'm talking about this, I'm not actually saying that this is correct and good. It was something that Islam wanted to eliminate gradually and in a sort of smooth manner. That you commit a sin, you free a slave. You want sawab of Allah, you free a slave. You want, as we know, for example, Prophet, peace be on him, never kept a slave. Any slave, even gifted to him, he freed them. I mean, Zayd was his slave. He freed them and made him his own adopted son. And there were others as well. So this shows that the attitude was not towards keeping slaves. However, the situation internationally, globally, was as in such a way that it was not possible. And it gave this sort of affection that slaves and free people are equal in the eyes of Allah. The status is not different. And there, although there are some social laws and legal requirements, but that doesn't mean that spiritually they are different and it's good to treat them equally. And here is very important. There were many, for example, mushrik free women who had high status. And Allah says that a slave girl, a slave lady who is a believer is above them. So what is the criterion here? Is faith, isn't it? If, for example, you cannot afford or you cannot find someone to marry a free woman, go and ask for the marriage of the slaves of some other person, which of course would have some complications legally as well, because the girl belonged to someone else and you married them. But in spite of that, wala amatun mu'minatun khayrun min mushrika. Now here, there are many actually legal and fiqh implications that it takes some time to discuss. So inshallah, I will leave this for next week discussion about this marriage between Muslims and non-Muslims, Ahlul Kitab and Mushriks and such things. And since all days there have been differences of opinion in that, inshallah, I will discuss this next week. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Brother and sister, we have about 10-15 minutes to debate or clarify anything. Yep.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Reading the middle where it says about they are like your brothers, like your brethren. It has implications on adoption, which is a big issue recently with Syrian orphans coming over. And the first reaction that I've got from people is that there's going to be an issue with Namahram as the child grows up. So if you adopt a boy, then it's going to become Namahram to the mother. And if you adopt a girl, then it becomes Namahram to the father. So keeping in mind that things were different at that time with the slavery going on, is there a ruling particularly for this, or is it made more difficult by this adoption?
I don't understand the relation between adoption and slavery.
So when you have rulings in those days, it might have been different. So now if I speak to people about adoption of Syrian children, then the first reaction we get is that it's Namahram, going to be Namahram. A child is going to grow up and become Namahram. So yeah. Present day, do we have a ruling which says that it's okay to adopt children and make them your own and then the Mahram?
Well, in those days were not different as well. I mean, the adoption was there. And issue of Mahram and non-Mahram, of course, may cause some difficulties at home. But the benefits of adoption may be more than these difficulties that we have to somehow endure, the difficulties of that we have to endure. But anyhow, the issue of mahram and non-mahram wouldn't go away. With adoption, the issue of mahram and non-mahram wouldn't go away. And even in those days, it didn't go away. With regards to slaves, whether either boys and male or female, they were mahram to their masters. And even, for example, if a lady had slaves, male, they were mahram. Not mahram in the sense that they could have relations, mahram in the sense that there was not this barrier of hijab between them.
Sheikh, sorry, just to take Riaz's point a bit further. Okay, adoption, okay, sometimes, you know, we may like to adopt an infant, one day old infant, and then he or she grows up, and then the question arises. I mean, he or she becomes a part of the family, brothers, sisters. Now, how would you explain to him or her that now there's a question of hijab and all that, because he or she has become part of the brother, sister, then later on, how do you sort of approach it?
If these things are not explained, then in many a case, they will be abused, you know, and you don't look into your own family or people that you know that you are very nice and, for example, they never think about that. But we know that, of course, abuse of non-mahram, whether boy or girl, is a probability in families. And therefore, when this is explained, it is better than just keep it like that. And the benefits of explaining that and the benefits of them knowing the rules and regulations is better than going through that hardship of, unless if you don't want to tell them that they are not from your family, or that if you want to keep it as a secret, that they are your children rather than someone else's children, which of course these are very sensitive issues. I mean, they have to be decided case by case. There are ways for making a mahram relationship, like for example, sort of short mut'ah with some relative which makes the people mahram with each other. For example, if they are a boy, they, for example, the lady at a house, if they are a boy, for example, there'll be a mut'ah between that boy and mother of the lady for a short time, and then they become mahram with each other. So these are the rulings that would apply.
Thank you. Any sisters? Sisters? Any sisters? No, brother? Riyas, can you pass the mic?
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. The second verse that you talked about, not to marry an idolatress until they believe. Now, in a situation where at the time of marriage, the partner or the woman says she believes and the marriage goes ahead on that basis. If at a later stage, because I know of one example of this, if the woman then, you know, her conversion wasn't really sincere and she kind of goes back to her idolatry type in a kind of a hidden way, what should the husband do in that situation?
When you say hidden way, you mean
husband surreptitiously, you know, not openly.
You mean husband doesn't know?
Yeah, she sort of does it secretly, and he probably suspects it, but doesn't know for sure.
Well, suspicion doesn't count anyhow in such cases. They have to make sure.
Okay.
That's the.
So what if he then makes sure? Does that mean he needs to annul the marriage?
This is the question of irtidad, which we'll discuss next week.
Okay.
About what happens if one of the spouses goes back in their Islam. What will happen? Okay. Shall I will discuss next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. Can we keep the case of adoption secret, like treat them as our family members and say that they are our own children like that? Can we do that?
It doesn't, of course, legally in terms of Sharia, it doesn't actually have any prohibition to do that. Provided this issue of mahram and non-mahram is resolved, you know. Otherwise, I mean, if you don't need to tell lies, they just take it for granted that, for example, these are my parents, and no lie is going on. It doesn't matter, although it is much better that if that's explained for them, that who are your genetical parents, for example, that things like that. But sometimes families take it very difficult that they explain for a child that they raised and they thought that these are my parents, may find it very difficult. As I said, these things are very delicate and should be dealt with case by case.
Because even like, see, if a mother has adopted a child when the child was 3 days old and the child is growing up, a 14, 15-year-old falls ill. Now the mahram and non-mahram to deal with the child, because we have two in our family, but so difficult even for the mother to think that, oh, he's my non-mahram now because he's balig. So how do we?
You know, these intimate relations, of course, as I said, for example, if the mother takes hijab or scarf, they would realize that's. I don't know how they
handle. But they're living like normal children, isn't it? They've never done hijab and find it now suddenly 15-year-old you start wearing a hijab in front of him.
And they don't know that these are their.
Yeah, they don't know. They're taking their parents, I mean, and now to tell them.
Yeah. Yeah, as I say, it's very delicate. I have no answer for that. I have no answer for that.
And then the question of inheritance as well comes in, doesn't it?
No, inheritance is very clear, of course. Inheritance is only for genetic relationship, not for adoption or things.
Yeah, but then, I mean, for example, this case just discussed briefly. I mean, the child grows up and you give inheritance to your own children and he or she is left out.
Well, they can actually make a will about it, that from one third, that, for example, this son of mine or daughter of mine, the adopted one, should take this much property, or they make it clear in a will in a way that they do not understand. But as I said, there is no reason why we have to keep these things very secret. It's just a sort of emotional thing. And sometimes if things are explained and clarified, it's better than keeping secrets like that.
Sure. Okay, any brothers? Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum. You said that the verse in Surah Nisa was misinterpreted by some of the companions who took the words literally and they wouldn't associate with them and they wouldn't go to their houses, etc. If it was so clear, why didn't the Prophet actually tell them, well, actually, no, this isn't what it means, this is what it means. Why did there need to be a revelation for that?
Good question. Sometimes these things went on for a while, even without Prophet knowing it, that these things were going on. For example, some people were treating orphans like that. And when the question came, for example, then the revelation came about it. Or maybe Prophet, peace be on him, explained it, but they were still in doubt because they were still thinking about the strict rulings of the verse. And then the revelation came to somehow settle everything. And you see the tone of this revelation, that yes, it is hard to deal with orphans. You have to be very careful. And if Allah wished, he would have put you in hardship. But there's this ease, and you have to take it with ease. Maybe at the time, if we consider the context, the verses really meant that, and people really thought that this is the case, and Allah somehow revealed this ease of treatment for them. Maybe.
I know that the sequence of revelation, it might be suggested that Surah Baqarah or the verses in Baqarah came after Surah Nisa. But just like Khamr, they say that it was first of all started off easily and then the harsh verse came off completely stopping it. Could this be taken in that way, that in fact the Baqarah verses came first to make it easier for them and then the harsh verses of Surah Nisa?
Well, all commentators have actually said otherwise. They have said those verses came first. And actually in reports that we have from Ibn Abbas, that he said because of those verses, people were very strict, and then this verse came down. So we take them as a sort of indication that this verse in Surah Baqarah came after those verses.
Nisa is Makkiyan.
No, Nisa is Madani. Nisa is Madani, no. There's lots of rulings about many things which, of course, a society of Muslims should apply.
Any sisters? Yep.
Assalamu alaikum, thank you so much. In the case of mixed marriage, where parents are not happy, but the son wants to get married to a Christian girl or a Jewish girl or Hindu girl, whatever it may be, she does it to please the parents at that time. Because otherwise, if the parents does not accept that, they might lose a son or a daughter, whatever it may be. In circumstances like this, there's no choice. And then after, okay, she would just do the nikah, whatever the formalities may be, and then do it her own way in a married life. So what can you do about that?
You mean the man converts?
Oh, yeah, and back to whatever religion he belonged to.
Converts?
Just, do the conversion for the time being.
Formally?
But
in reality,
she's not. In your heart to heart, no conversion.
And now, the thing about this conversion is that we take people for their word, okay? Even if we know that in their hearts they do not, but we take them for their word. When they say, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, we take them for their word. Now, if they later on deny it, if they don't deny it, but they don't practice.
Yeah, they don't deny it, but they don't practice.
Well, there are many Muslims who don't practice as well. So we take them for their word, as long as they haven't confessed otherwise, haven't denied it. When they deny it, then, of course, the problem of this shirk and or going out of Islam comes. As long as they verbally do not deny it, we take them for their words.
Thank you. Any brothers? No? Shadiga?
Alaykum as-salam.
Okay, so back to adoption. There was a talk here once on a Friday by someone who's like some sort of expert in adoption. And what she was saying is that around 50, 60 scholars and stuff, different schools of thoughts and stuff, they got together and they're trying to change the ruling about adoption to make the mahram, nahmahram thing easier. I don't know, she was saying that they may make it something like... the child, if she's about, the child is about 4 or 5, then it becomes like you don't. Then it becomes a mahram. It becomes mahram. And I don't know. I just wanted to ask you if you'd heard anything about this, because she was saying that I don't know. They'd got so many scholars together to try and find a way around this whole mahram na mahram thing for adoption, because obviously Islam says such high things about adoption, but it makes it so hard if the child is your na mahram. So I don't know, have you heard anything?
Well, it's good if they come and find a solution. It's very good.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that they find a solution. They have found a solution. But if they come together, I mean, from any mazhab and they discuss it and they find a way, it's very good. You know, adoption, since old days there was this problem. I mean, when Prophet, peace be on him, adopted Zayd as his son, and he was really an adoption, and he was a slave gifted to him by Khadija or someone else. And then, as I said, Prophet never kept a slave, just freed them. So he freed him and adopted him because he was very young, had a very young age. And then when this issue of marriage with his wife, Zainab bint Jahsh, you know, Zayd has a wife, Zainab bint Jahsh, who was a cousin of Prophet, peace be on him, and he actually, Prophet somehow encouraged them to marry. But later on, Zainab bint Jahsh thought that this is not my match, he was a slave, and things like that. Okay, and eventually, Zayd had to divorce her, and she was really in favor of marrying with the Prophet and had mentioned that. So, Prophet married her. And this created a huge problem in Medina, that Prophet has married wife of his son. You see, the adoption was taken to be real as a genetically born child. Okay, if Prophet has adopted him, so he's his son, and therefore it's not allowed for him to marry his wife. So these verses in Surah Ahzab came, and you see how elaborately discusses it, because it created a real problem in Medina. And people who were thinking in that way, that an adopted son and adopted child is really like a child, were in a sense criticizing the Prophet. But the verses clarify that no, adoption is adoption. Never makes them your sons or your daughters. And therefore, if nowadays people can find a solution for it, as I said, the only solution is if, for example, there is a mut'ah, short period mut'ah between the boy or the girl with someone, of course, for the girl it's very difficult, for the boy it's easier, with someone who, of course, would make the mother mahram to him, it's the only way that people have come up with up till now. Other than that, I don't know.
Thank you. Any brothers? Sheikh, if you can clarify this, because you mentioned 7 of our imams are from slave girls. Now, if you take a stage by stage in sequence, say an imam gets in his household a slave girl, so that would be would that relationship as a slave girl, there would be some kind of a recitation of something that she becomes a slave girl, or as soon as
the mere purchase would have made them mahram.
Okay,
And if they had relation and a child was born, she would become Ummu Walad.
So, okay, let's stop here. When they have relationship, so that relationship is, as I mean, when we want to marry, we have a recitation of nikah and all that. Would they have there some kind of recitation there?
As or? I said, the purchase is like recitation. The purchase okay. was like recitation.
Okay, okay.
So don't then, be so scrupulous about it.
No, no, but I just want to understand it. I just want no to understand
now.
It.
There's no point now.
No, 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 there's no point, but how our imams used to live with the slave girls,
yes.
that's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
So they were slave girls.
As I said, they were very prominent ladies.
Yeah, no, whatever. I'm not questioning about their piety or non-piety or whatever.
Yeah.
But the stages that I'm trying to understand, that so they were brought in as slave girls. Then presumably imam had some relation. So then we had another imams from them. So then would there be at any other stage after that a proper recitation, or that continued in as a marriage?
As I said, the mahramiya came in two ways, not comes, came in two ways. One is when you recite the nikah formula with a free woman, or second, when you purchased a girl or a lady. Mm. When you purchased a slave girl, that was the final formula of mahramiya. That was it.
Okay, so then now, at present, when we have nikah, now is that nikah actually necessary to be recited, or if
yes.
I and a girl
yes, it's decide? Necessary. Yeah, yeah. Do not compare the two. Do not compare the two. Yes, it's necessary to be recited.
Okay, but has it to be in a specific form in Arabic, or if I decide to marry a girl, I said, okay, we marry each other and that's it. Has it to be decided in Arabic and specific words that we have it in our mosque and masajid and so on?
We recite in Arabic so that they don't understand what calamity they bring to themselves. Yeah, all fuqaha say that it should be recited in Arabic, yeah.
Okay, in Arabic, but those specific words?
Yeah, well, of course, I mean, the specific words, there are different ways of saying it in formula, they have mentioned it, but it should notify or it should signify the fact that the girl says, I marry you, or the representative says that, and the boy says, I accept. But this term is very clear, and there are certain formula. Yes, it has to be said in the way, it's a precaution to be said in the way which is mentioned in Risala.
Okay.
So why do you want to mention it in another way?
No, because... Anyway, okay, I think brother has a question, I think.
Or maybe you have an intention, huh?
Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. A question, I'm going to try and see if I can word this right. So, at the time of the Prophet, with these Yas Alunaka verses, there seems to be there had to be a balance. Like, for example, you said in Surah Nisa, they were very strict, and then they asked about the orphans, the kham, the wine, the idolater and the marriage of that as well. What my question is, how much asking should we do? Because these are social situations which change over time, and they move into legislation and fiqh. And sometimes when we ask too much, for example, we get the output which we don't like, for example, or we've asked too much and it's gone too deep. So they seem to have always asked, yes, Alunaka, they asked the Prophet. Has that continued throughout the journey through the Imams and now till today, we're continuously asking questions because of the social changes that happened?
At that time, revelation was coming. That's very different from now. Now, whatever is said or what opinion is expressed is based on the revelation. Okay, no new revelation would come. But at the time of the Prophet, of course, it was very different. Revelation was coming. Actually, Allah was speaking to people. Nowadays, it's scholars who speak to us based on those revelations. Nothing new will come to us. Yeah.
So are we saying that this, from a social perspective, is it Islam is complete? Because revelation came at a time, it was growing, it was developing, and then the Prophet passed away. Now Islam is complete, we say.
Islam is complete, but we have the process of ijtihad. An ijtihad means that always new issues come up that our fuqaha, by going back to those sources, should find out what would be the ruling of this new issue, this new matter, according to Islam. Of course, we cannot get new revelation from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Even at the time of Imams, I mean, they could not bring any new revelation. The Imams were only protectors and the clarifiers rather than bringing new rulings. So it was just an explanation, and now as well. So whatever new issue comes up, we cannot, in a sense, we cannot falsify the old rulings. But sometimes the rulings, the old rulings, do not find any context to be applied. Not that they are wrong. They do not find any context to apply. And then we have new context in which new rulings are required, which is then we have to go to ijtihad. The maraji should do ijtihad and find out the rulings.
So sorry to add on, just so it's it, like on the adoption question here, we keep asking the question, should we just say, okay, adoption at the moment, they're now mahram to me, that's done, finished, question's over. But now we're asking the question and keep probing the question for a solution. That's okay to do in the time that we're in, because we're trying to find the solution to this.
You know, this is not a new problem. Since the time of the Prophet, it was there. And for 1400 years, people have tried to find the solution. Keep trying. Keep trying, okay?
Any sisters? Any sisters? Any brothers? Any more? Okay, Raza, can you pass the mic to the back?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I know I've come late. I interact with young people every day. I teach. And there are some questions which are mind-boggling. Just the other day, what is the maslaha behind the differences of opinion of different marja? Why can't we have something which will make it easier for us to practice our religion, rather than my son has to fast, I have to do it? I mean, this is just one example. I'm not saying this is what the young people come up with. Where is the unity within the Shias when these sort of things are have to be accepted?
Well, the answer is very clear. We do not have access to revelation, okay? We do not have access to Imam, and we have to actually embark on an intellectual struggle to find out the rulings. And when you have this intellectual, scientific struggle, people come up with different opinions. It's very clear. I mean, you have this about medics, you have this in physics, you have this in any other science, and you have this in fiqh. The reason is that we don't have access to the main source, and we have to struggle.
La yukallifullahu nafsan illa wusaha.
Okay.
God knows this.
Yes.
Why does he not have something in place where these sort of differences amongst the Shias in the same home? I mean, this is really, really, I would say, unfortunate.
You
because
not...
I know I'm not a marja, I'm not, but this is something for what a layman will think like.
You were not here when we're discussing the verse about Shahrul Haram. And this issue, difference in moon sighting, caused a huge problem. And that was, a battle was taken place at the end of Jumad al-Thani, or beginning of Rajab, and the people thought that at the end of Jumad al-Thani, there was difference in moon sighting, and a huge crisis was created at the time of the Prophet. Now, if that is there, what about us? So, I mean, these are very natural. Why Allah hasn't made it easy for us, for example, that all medics have one opinion about treatments? Well, this is human...
Don't you think there's a difference between this example of medics than what are really core within us, which is our identity, which is the fitrah of an insan, that we should be together, we should always not have differences in the same home? I mean,
there's a very, very clear solution for that. Why should people in the same home follow different marriages, all follow one marriage. I mean, that means that's all the solution.
But you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, you are allowed to do that.
Are you? I was told that if when I was born, that marja has passed away.
Yes.
Then you can't do his taqlid, mukallidin. Mm-hmm. So isn't that true?
So the parents could change their marja. Isn't it?
Okay, any sister?
I mean, there's a very easy solution for that. It's very easy solution.
But how can you change a marja when you know he's not alim?
How do you know that he's not alim?
Because I've done my research, I've asked people, and I know this new marja is not
so
alim.
The problem is with you, have done your research and you found out this marja is alim. You know, you yourself is actually creating the problem by saying that this is alim. The one that my children are following on is not alim, and therefore I follow him, and my children should follow someone.
Abba, isn't it a must for me to find out who is alim before I do taqlid? I
have you done it? How have you done it?
I ask my elders, I ask my role models, I ask people like you.
I think, Sheikh, we are digressing from the subject, so if you don't
know. No, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a very interesting question. But anyhow, as I said, these are the facts. The fact is there, and that is, we have no access to revelation. We have no access to the Imam.
Isn't that an excuse?
What excuse? I mean, this is the fact, isn't it?
Yes, but isn't that an excuse for us that because we don't have the revelation, Allah is more closer to me than the revelations.
You see, you say that you have done your research and you have found.
Sorry, if I don't mean that way.
No.
You know, I'm not a research.
No. I'm saying on something else. You say you have done your research. You have come with a different opinion than someone else, isn't it? Someone else or your children may think that this is A'lam, I follow. Now, in one family, you have come to different conclusions. What do you expect from Maraja? They come to different conclusions.
But Maraja are much higher than me. They are more wiser than me.
So they have to have more differences then.
Okay,
I'm still not very happy, but alhamdulillah.
Okay, Sheikh, thank you, Maraja. Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad Salat. So we continue next week.